Hey, good afternoon, Juneau. It's just coming up on 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, I'll be your host today for Juneau Afternoon. I have a great lineup of guests today. Skip Shields is already here in the studio with me. We're chatting a little bit before we come on after National Native News. Dancer Morocco will be here to tell us about the weekend workshops for belly dancers that she's conducting in Juneau. And the Poetry Slam folks will be here for Poetry Slam for Recovery Month. And Nancy DeCherney's Arts Up will be the closing part of our program today on Juneau Afternoon. Weather looks like, well, you guessed it, showers, followed by showers, and then tomorrow more showers, and then through the next two or three days, showers, and then kind of like up until about Wednesday, showers. So typical Juneau, huh?
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribes and Native organizations across the country have been hosting voter registration events. As Mike Simonson reports, the push to get people registered included Native people in Wisconsin.
The National Congress of American Indians has an organization of local volunteers in what they're calling Native Vote Action Week. Sault Ste. Marie Chippewa Lacey Kennard is registering people at the Gerald Ignace Indian Health Center on Milwaukee's south side.
Yeah, it is very important to me. When I heard that one in three Natives are only registered to vote, it kind of hit me because we are already a small population. Because this is such a huge election, we need to get our voice out there too, and every vote does count.
Kennard says if Native people don't vote, they won't be heard by policymakers.
We're not focused on. We're kind of like a quiet population.
Colin Price of the Ho-Chunk tribe is working to register Native voters in several western Wisconsin communities.
Obviously, it can't be everywhere, but I would like to do as much as I can and try to get some of our youth involved with registering some people as well.
Price says Native Vote Action Week is made up of a few people hoping to do a lot for many people.
Even on a national level, that Native Americans are seen as a voice to be heard. There's a lot of input that we have, and it should be taken not in a light tone, because these issues and policies, a lot of them are, we feel so strongly about and have a big voice.
The National Congress of American Indians says in the last presidential election, there are more than 1 million unregistered voters in Indian country. For National Native News, I'm Mike Simonson in Superior, Wisconsin.
The mother of slain U.S. Ambassador Chris Stevens talks about their Native American heritage. Reporter Jenny Monet has more.
Those who knew U.S. Ambassador Chris Stevens regarded the 52-year-old as a rising star in foreign policy circles, but few knew of his tribal connection to the Chinook Indians of Washington State. News that Stevens was a tribal citizen of the Chinook tribe surfaced in the immediate aftermath of his September 11th death in Libya. A local newspaper from Washington tracked down a Facebook post by a distant cousin asking the tribal chairman, Ray Gardner, to send prayers to the family. Those prayers were made, and now, 2 weeks later, Stevens' mother, Mary Commonday of Northern California, has come forward to share a family legacy she says has been well documented over the years. Ancestors trace back to a young Indian maiden believed to be kin to the great Chinook chief Comcomly, who reigned throughout the late 18th and early 19th centuries. Commonday says as many as three generations of forebears are buried in a cemetery in the town of Ilwaco, Washington, a coastal community not far from where the Chinook tribal offices are situated today.
Chris went with my dad and took my mother's ashes up there and had them there, took care of the whole burial in Ilwaco. So he was very much a part of that whole process.
Chairman Gardner estimates that Ambassador Stevens is believed to have been an eighth Chinook Indian. For National Native News, I'm Jenny Monet.
Tribal and federal officials announced Thursday a $43 million agreement for the Navajo Gallup Water Supply Project. It helps fund the design and construction of a portion of the project, which broke ground in June in New Mexico. When completed, it will help deliver clean running water to thousands of people in Navajo communities, the city of Gallup, and part of the Jicarilla Apache Nation. U.S. Senator Tim Johnson announces funding for the study of Native American health disparities. On Thursday, the South Dakota senator announced Sanford Research and the University of South Dakota will receive $1.5 million in federal funding. It will be used to create a research center headquartered in Sioux Falls. On the fourth Friday in September annually, California celebrates Native American Day. In 1968, California Governor Ronald Reagan signed a resolution designating the fourth Friday in September as American Indian Day. The California State Assembly enacted legislation in the 90s, creating the day as an official state holiday. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kowanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 5 minutes and 20 seconds after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News. Pat Moore hosting today on Juneau Afternoon. And my first guest is going to be doing the Evening at Egan presentation up at the University of Alaska Southeast Campus this evening. Skip Scheel has been in town for a few days, I think, and has got
about a
few
week.
Days more with us, yeah, and is going to be doing a series of presentations around town. But the first one, I think, is tonight. Or have you already done a you haven't done a show yet?
Yes, last week with Juneau World Affairs Council at K2.
Okay, and then tonight at 7 o'clock, you're on stage up at the university in the Egan Hall. Skip, you've titled your talk, Israel, the Occupied Territories, and Nonviolent Resistance. And we have a tendency, I think, when we watch the newscasts that come out of the Middle East, to see the violent part of what goes on over there. But there's a great deal of nonviolent resistance that I don't think it makes as big a news story in the United States. Is that your experience?
That's true. And even though many of the demonstrations or other resistance actions are meant to be nonviolent, at some point the soldiers start firing or the boys start throwing rocks. And it's never clear who started what, but usually those then turn out to be fairly violent.
Now, you're seeing what you bring back to us through a photographer's eye. Is that perspective, I'm not sure quite what I'm trying to say here, but it seems to me that gives you a kind of an expert view of what you see. If you've trained your eye, you must see more than I would. Do you think so?
Well, I don't try to see more than you do, but I try to see very deeply and widely. And for one small example, I keep both eyes open when I photograph, unlike a lot of photographers. So my on-camera eye is scanning, not physically moving, but my concentration is scanning. So I'm watching for people entering or leaving or the sky changing, and I have to be aware of that and anticipate. Imagine riding a bicycle. One must be aware of cars in front. So somebody just got into a car, or somebody might have just pulled into a parking place and probably will open the door. That door could go into my path and knock me over. So anticipation is a big part of photography.
When you talk about anticipation, when you have the camera up to your face and you're in the middle of what could become a violent demonstration, do you ever feel like you're in trouble here?
If I'm smart, I realize where I am. I'll give you another example. A small village called Baleen for 5 years every week. Largely nonviolent demonstrations, but usually there's some rock throwing. And I've always wanted to photograph effectively rock throwing and rifle shooting. So one way to photograph a rock thrower is to stand in front. Now that puts my body between the soldiers and the rock thrower. I get so excited, I'm sure it's adrenaline, that I sometimes forget where I am and how vulnerable I am. Yet I'm still trying to position myself for the best photograph. Then hopefully something will kick in and say, Skip, you might want to take cover. You can still be in front, but have a rock between you and the soldier. So it's an exciting time. I have to be aware of the danger when I go in, anticipating it, and then try to always have somewhere in the back of my mind, the danger that I'm willing to accept.
There's an old quote from a tightrope walker who said that on the wire he's alive, and the rest of the time is just waiting to get back on the wire.
Yeah.
Do you sense that? Do you have that same sense of taking photos in the middle of a war zone?
Yeah, and it spreads out more than that. My ability to tolerate boredom has decreased significantly. So I travel a great deal. Roughly 3 months every year and a half to Israel-Palestine, roughly a month to 3 or 4 months every year or so on tour like this. And I love to be home. I love my home and my community. But shortly after I arrive home, I want to go again. So there's a strong urge to live on the wire, to travel, not necessarily to be in danger, but to be always challenging myself with new situations and trying to portray them.
Is there any other part of your life that is as exciting to you as taking pictures under these violence or potentially violent circumstances?
Yes. My sister, who's with us in the studio, is a very live wire, and her husband, Bob Schroeder, and I so love to be with them. There's always something going on. Walks, people to visit with, little controversies around Juno that I'm part of now because of my work. So that's part of it. But more broadly, love. Mm. Einstein said about light, all I want to do is study light. And I would second that about light, but I would add, all I want to do is study love. So I'm in the midst of romance and breakup and all sorts of things, and that's very exciting. Just as exciting as working in Israel-Palestine.
When you take a picture of someone, I'm minded of a couple of shots that we were looking at on the internet earlier this afternoon. When you take a picture of someone and you get their eyes looking straight at you, how much of a connection is formed between you and that person?
It varies a great deal. Often I don't see everything in the frame until I can rest and look more carefully, and I may not even notice that somebody is looking at me. I'll give you an extreme example.
Mm-hmm.
Jerusalem, unbeknownst to a lot of people, is the city of love, as Paris is. It's not known that way. But I fell in love there, 2006, and I made a series of photographs of that woman during sunset and right by the wall of the old city. And she looked directly into the camera. When I had a chance to examine the photos, I thought they were really remarkable, and I sent them to her and didn't hear a thing about the photographs for about a year. She said, Skip, the reason I didn't say anything about those photos was I was so distressed, so disturbed when I saw them. They just sunk into my computer memory. The reason I was disturbed was because you had shown me a part of myself that I've tried to keep hidden. I'm a very secretive person. So it was in her eyes and looking directly at the camera. One needn't look at the camera to achieve some kind of breakthrough with a portrait, but sometimes that's the hinge.
Mm-hmm. When you're in the middle of some kind of demonstration or something like that, and you've got the camera in your hand, how conscious are you of things like framing and that? Do you just have to have that to the point where you don't even think about it at all in order to do the good job?
Both. I go in and out of thinking very carefully about every step. I have a checklist I sometimes run through: awareness, light, position, time, experiment, design. And other times it's fairly instinctual. So with the experience I've had, often I don't have to consciously think, but I play with the camera a great deal. So if I'm photographing something that's relatively stationary, I'll try framing it in different ways, and I'll be thinking about that, not sure which framing will work best. And if it's something moving, then the added element of time makes the situation more complex. So I might hold the frame and simply click periodically as whatever I'm showing changes.
Which is much easier now with digital than it used to be in the old days when you had 36 shots in the camera at a whack. Are there other differences? You've been taking pictures for a long time. Are there other differences that you've noticed as you've transitioned?
Well, an obvious one is the ability to insert or delete parts of the image. So if I'm photographing, say, the Gaza waterfront, there are a lot of wires.
Hmm.
And I'll try to find a position where the wires either are removed completely or are minimal. But I know that when I work on that photograph in Photoshop, I'll be able to remove those wires probably. Hmm. So that's a big difference from film days. You know, some of that was possible, but it was very difficult. Which, though, raises a question. Now, this was right on the tip of your tongue. How true are your photographs?
That was exactly what I was about to ask.
Yeah. Well, it goes beyond rubbing out wires, deleting wires, but just the simple act of framing or timing. For example, I have a show about the Jordan River, which I'm going to show on Sunday at Northern Light. Church at 7 o'clock. I traced the Jordan River from one of its three headwaters, the Banias, down to where it disappears before it reaches the Dead Sea. And I did it in September, which is the height of the dry season. Had I photographed all of that in, say, March, at the height of the wet season, the rainy season, everything would have looked much different. So I am showing you might say not one-sided exactly, but a selective view of that river system simply by when I was there.
Skip Shield, I've got four shows coming up. There's one tonight at 7 o'clock at Egan up at the University of Alaska campus, and that is the Israeli Occupied Territories and Nonviolent Resistance. Sunday, 10 in the morning at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. Is a description of the descendants of Abraham, Sarah, and Hagar. Sunday at 7 p.m., so it's three shows. Northern Lights, tracing the Jordan River at the Northern Lights, and then you're doing some appearances in the schools, already been in the alternative high school, and probably going to one of the middle schools sometime here. Well, we're glad to have you showing your photos in Juneau.
Thank you, Pat.
the klezmer music chosen because we have a gentleman in town who's going to be showing a lot of pictures of the Middle East over the next few days. His travels over there, Skip Scheel. Just talked to him a couple of moments ago. I have three beautiful ladies here in the studio with me. Marako is here. She's going to be doing a series of Oriental dance workshops this week. And with her is Kathleen Gamble and Morocco's assistant, Karima Najira. So, ladies, welcome to Juno. Well, welcome everyone except Kathleen, who's been here all along. Quietly. So, where are you from?
Originally or recently?
Well, say in the last 2 years.
New York.
New York? Okay. Cool.
And various and sundry other places around the world where I research or teach.
And who do you expect to show up and be taught by you this weekend?
Oh, a bunch of wonderful ladies from Juno who've been into Oriental dance for a while. We're close to sold out. There might be one or two spots left. And we had the first class last night, which was oversold out, but we managed to use the room space judiciously and had a grand old time.
Good.
Yeah.
Now, this used to be called, in one sense, it's called belly dancing, but
no,
you corrected
isn't.
Me when you walked
yes.
in the door and you said this is Oriental dance, and I wanted to find out what the
Why?
Difference is.
Okay. In Arabic, it's called Rakshari, which translates as Oriental dance. In Turkish, it's called Oriental dansı, which translates as Oriental dance. During an era of colonialism and racism, it was insultingly misnamed danse de ventre by some of the French colonials, which in that era, some of the racier, more bold Americans translated as belly dance in an era when arm and leg were considered dirty words. And you didn't ask for chicken breast or chicken thigh meat, you asked for light or dark meat, because if arm and leg were dirty words, you can imagine what they thought about breast and thigh. And when you sat down and you wanted the drumstick, you asked for a drumstick because you didn't even dare say chicken leg. And so in that era, saying quote-unquote belly dance was like using some of the words we still can't use on television today, and it was an insult to the culture, the performer, the dance form, because this is a folk and social dance that's done in the homes by people with their families. It's kind of like Latinos doing merengue or samba or cha-cha. And in fact, when the waltz first came out, it was considered indecent and people were arrested for doing it in the same era. And now it's considered the height of classical elegance.
Now, the Oriental dance, I stand mm-hmm. corrected, that I'm
yeah.
familiar with usually proceeds from a usually a 2-2 beginning that is beaten or led by the Doombeg and possibly by Zills, and then moves on into a more complex dance and
depends.
Then kind of fades back. So it's
depends. It
yeah.
depends on whether you have a Magensi or not in Egyptian Arabic or Magensi in Shemi Arabic. It could be a 2 or a 4. It could be, if you're doing Turkish style, it might even be a 9-8.
Yeah.
If you're going to be really bold, it could be a semai, which is a 10-8. And it depends on the individual performer and the style that's popular at the time. When people are just boogieing at home, they dance to whatever is popular. And right now in Egypt, a style of modern folk music called shabi is popular, and because it came from people who were originally from the country, or what they would call belly music, but now it's shabby because they're using more modern themes in their lyrics, politics, social commentary, love songs. So it depends. In other places, they use jil or pop music. Depending on what's popular at the time with the people, they dance to it, but they use a different movement vocabulary than Western dance forms. That's all.
Hmm. Kathleen, your organization brought Morocco to town. How many people are involved? And are you the there's two groups in town, and I always get them confused.
We are the Oriental Dance Group. We try very hard to maintain an appearance that you might see if you were actually in the Middle East. There are some times when we retreat into fantasy. Because fantasy is very popular and fun. This is the sixth time we have brought Auntie Rocky to Juno. And there is a reason for that. Annie Rocky knows her stuff. And when we get a workshop from Annie Rocky, we feel like we've had a workshop, and we often learn a choreography that we can use. And the city of Juneau has seen many of Annie Rocky's choreographies performed in various venues here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're the Daughters of the New Moon, right?
The Daughters of the New Moon, okay. Correct.
Right. What kinds of opportunities have you found recently to perform as a troupe?
We danced for Friday Evening in the Park, and that is something that we try to do every year. In fact, Morocco danced Friday Evening in the Park one year when we were here. We convinced the Arts and Humanities Council to extend their period by one Friday, because that was when Morocco was coming, and she did dance in the park. It was absolutely marvelous, although she almost froze to death.
You guys thought it was summer. I'm from New York. That wasn't summer. My goosebumps were bigger than my bosom.
We think this is still summer. So
you say.
Yeah, we will be dancing for the Day of Dance that's coming up at the end of October here at, the Arts and Humanities Council building.
Mm-hmm. So when you do a dance performance, do people get up and join you from the audience, or is it an observed thing?
It's mostly an observed thing, mm-hmm. And I say mostly. I do have a video where a young woman was so inspired that she jumped up and started dancing the entire half hour with the group, and I actually have that on an older video.
Which leads to a question that I wanted to ask you. To what extent can someone just let the spirit move them to this kind of music and dance to it without instruction or without practice?
It depends on how well acquainted you are with your body and what kind of a movement vocabulary there is in it. It's like, well, if you're moved to want to speak French and you only know three words of French, how much can you say in French? But if you're just like having a party boogieing for your own self and just feel like moving, you can move to any music. If you're going to do it correctly, there is a specific movement vocabulary. It's like you're not going to do Swan Lake in tap shoes or in flamenco shoes. Of course, you could try it and might get something really interesting out there. I've seen people do Oriental to Beethoven's Fifth and do a decent job of it, and there are times when there's no other music but Western music, and you can do a decent job to that. But it depends on the circumstances. You can't just do it well without knowing what the movement vocabulary is. And like with ballet and other dance arts like flamenco, the more you know, the more you have to call on when you're improvising or having fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, it's a folk dance, and folks do folk dances for what? For fun.
I was once asked to dance to Bula Bula because I was dancing for a birthday party, and it was a gentleman that it was his college song. It is a very difficult piece to dance to.
We had a dancer, I think, in town, or I believe she taught some classes here, who was teaching a kind of a combination of South Pacific dance styles, mm-hmm. with Oriental dancing.
Mm-hmm. The movement vocabulary is similar enough. If you're doing real hula, I had a hula hui rehearsing in my studio for over 25 years, and it was fascinating to see where the similarities and the differences were in the two ethnic forms.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of similarities in, so, well, who got what from whom. It's possible that they all started on their own because it's based on a human body and the natural striations and directions of the musculature and how you can articulate your muscles to the not only the rhythm, but the melody, the phrasing, the quality of the instrument, and the mood of the song that's going on. If you're doing a performance, if you're just having a party and you're just boogieing with your buddies, then all bets are off. Anything you want to do to it is within, you know, what you feel like doing to it is up to you. That's what folk is about. That's what fun dancing is about. But as a performance art, you need to be much better than the average bear, be it a black or a brown one, ruining the garbage in your front yard.
How will people get into the workshop?
Well, they at this point in time, it would be just a really good idea to show up at the Racquet Club in the Valley their dance studio about noon tomorrow. The workshop starts at 12:30 and runs till 5 o'clock. Same for Sunday. It will be starting at about 12:30 and running till 5 o'clock. Same location, Valley Racquet Club, upstairs in their dance studio.
I'm assuming there's a fee.
Yes, there is a fee. For a single day, we are charging $100 if you're only taking the one workshop. So you've gotten past all of the early registrations fees. So it would be $100 each day.
So, Morocco, welcome back to Juneau. Kathleen, thank you so much for arranging this once again. And I hope your workshops are full and all of the ladies and folks who come out for it enjoy themselves.
Thank you. You're an absolute delight.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 28th of September, 2012. It's the birthday of the British novelist and translator Edith Pargiter, born in Shropshire, 1913. She wrote a few novels in the early 1940s, and then during World War II met soldiers from Czechoslovakia who were stationed in Liverpool, and she developed a passion for Czech. She learned how to speak it, studying 78 RPM records. She wrote a book about Czechoslovakia, the coast of Bohemia, translated over a dozen works by leading Czech writers, including Josef Boer's tale of the Verdi concert at Auschwitz, the Terezin Requiem in 1963. In the early 50s, Pargiter tried her hand at mystery writing with the short story Fallen into the Pit, which introduced her character, Brother Cadvile. He was a medieval Sherlock Holmes, lived at Shrewsbury Abbey, and solved mysteries and performed early forensics. Other mystery writers set their stories in the Victorian era, and Pargiter set hers 700 years earlier in the Middle Ages. Brother Cadvile, a Benedictine sleuth, appeared in 20 of her novels. The last was The Holy Thief in 1992, all of them centered on Shrewsbury. And they were so popular that they created a whole little tourist industry in the area. It was called Brother Cadvile Country. She died in 1995, Edith Pargiter, and The Guardian described her as one tough old bird. It's the birthday of the Chilean poet and songwriter Victor Jara, born outside of Santiago in 1932. Wrote socially conscious songs, part of the rising leftist movement in Chile, campaigned on behalf of the presidential candidate Salvador Allende, who was elected president in 1970 and then was overthrown in a right-wing coup in 1973. The following morning, Victor Jara and 5,000 others were rounded up, taken to a stadium, interrogated, many of them tortured, murdered. Soldiers broke the bones in Jara's hands, and as he sang his song, Venceremos, We Will Win, he was shot. And it's the birthday of Ed Sullivan, born New York City, 1901, who in 1948 was asked to host a Sunday night variety show on CBS. The Ed Sullivan Show ran for 23 years. He booked black artists like Sammy Davis Jr. and Ella Fitzgerald. The Supremes were a favorite of his. They appeared 17 times, and Nat King Cole as well. Ed Sullivan, who said, if you do a good job for others, you heal yourself at the same time, because a dose of joy is a spiritual cure. It transcends all barriers. Here's a poem for today by Robin Serra, entitled A Watcher. The mail doesn't come and doesn't come. The mail doesn't come. It's 3 o'clock. I've been downstairs to check and up again and down and up. It doesn't come. Incognito in the little shops is how I want to go, and in and out about the neighborhood, observing, unobserved. And yet I long, long to be known and know. A Watcher, poem by Robin Sarah, from Questions About the Stars, published by Brick Books, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by PBS, presenting Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide, a two-night special starting October 1st at 9, 8 Central on PBS. And by the Poetry Foundation, iPad users can download the three most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 25 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. Pat Moore, your host today. And my next guest is a voice that anyone listening to the radio in Juno probably already knows and wonders why I'm talking and she's not. Mee Christiansen is here to talk about the part of Recovery Month, which has been an ongoing event all the way through September. And this one that's coming up is the Poetry Slam. Hi, Mee.
Hi, Pat.
So we were talking just as Garrison Keillor was reading that last poem to us about where the heck poetry slams came from. I was trying to figure out if this was something from ancient Greece or where the idea of a bunch of people getting together and slamming down a poem on each other came from.
You know, I was thinking, as I shared, that it probably had its roots back in the beat poetry events that were going on in the 50s, late 50s and 60s. Getting together with friends and putting it out there, and you know, who came up with the idea of competing for prizes, I really am not quite sure where that started. But I do know that there's been an international organization, or at least a national organization, handling competition with teams from every state across the nation, and usually a team from Anchorage gets put together and goes to this event and annually. And that's been going on for well over 10 years, because that was the last time I went. It was 10 years ago.
So the one that's coming up is a slam with a specific theme.
Absolutely, because this is part of the Recovery Month efforts, and so we are talking about recovery from substance abuse or mental illness issues, and that's the basic concept, you know, that it's going to be original poetry coming from people who are struggling with these issues in their lives.
The event is at Rockwell, and it's at what time?
Well, we're starting with an open mic this year. It's not common. We didn't used to have an open mic part of it, and then last year when it was at the Canvas, Nami Erickson had this open mic part of it, and it was kind of like, well, yeah, you know, that is kind of nice if somebody wants to come and read a poem, but they don't feel like they want to present twice, or they don't feel like they want to be judged and, you know, have their poem put some numbers on it or something of how good it is. And if you just want to share, there will be an open mic at 6:30, and then the actual competition will start at 7.
So it's a competition for prizes.
Absolutely.
Okay, what's the prize?
Well, it starts with cash prizes, and, you know, this is part of the pot, I guess, that, you know, NCAD has together from all these different organizations. They've pitched in some cash prizes. I did make a little bit of a special effort in the last couple of days, and so, you know, I have some special thanks to send out to Catherine Milliron, my principal at MRCS, who donated some beautiful pens, as well as Northern Treasures and the Alaska Fudge Company and Juno Drug Company, all pitched in some goodies. So it's going to be a nice little bit of swag going on there.
All right. So at this point, do you have the folks who are not at the open mic all booked, or are you still, are there slots available for the stand-up part?
Come and sign up at the time. The doors open at 6 o'clock, so we'll have a full half an hour of food, gathering, you know, getting settled in, and then we'll start with the open mic, and we'll probably close the sign-up for the competition by about 6:45, I would say, at the latest.
And I guess I'm not sure if this is a valid question or not. How closely do you feel people have to adhere to the theme? In other words, does the poem have to address a specific issue in the person's life, or what are you looking for there?
Well, you know what we do? The way that these slams go, We invite people in the audience to be judges. And we set it up with five judges out there, and they're going to be responding to the poetry according to their own perspectives of what they see. And whether it's something that they think is powerful and connects to them and gives them a sense of this is about recovery, hey, you know, that works, right? And, you know, if there's people out there as the judges that feel like, gee, this doesn't really seem to be about, you know, what I think this is about, that'll show in the scores that they give.
So other than these five people, you got space. You're doing this at Rockwell upstairs, right?
Yeah, it's
so you
nice
got space for lots of folks
we
in there.
We do.
Yeah. So there's a terrific opportunity for lots of people to hear something out of the ordinary.
Absolutely,
yeah.
And really intense. It's. I think that the poster says, and you can give me the language exactly. Something about PG-13 in there. You hand it to me without my glasses.
Yeah, I'll take care of it. I'll take care of it for you. I got my glasses on. So it says here, original personal poetry in the words of people who support and or have experienced recovery. Interesting. I hadn't caught that little word in there. So if I'm a person who may not have gone through addiction, but I've been on the edge of somebody else's addiction, I could write that or I could enter from that standpoint.
Absolutely. In fact, that's the standpoint that I come from because I'm a member of Al-Anon, which is a 12-step program for families and friends of alcoholics. And I experience people with substance abuse issues as well as mental health issues through my work as a special education support behavioral assistant in the Juneau School District, so I work with kids with diagnoses, and, you know, how to do that and how to deal with that is what my 12-step program is really all about. And so it's not even about that I have an addiction as opposed to that I have people in my life that have this, and it touches me, and it's something that I'm working through and offering support to people through.
For the competition, you want two original poems.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody's going to get to say it twice. There's going to be no elimination.
Okay.
That was, yeah.
Okay. And you said stick to PG-13, please.
Okay. Well, see, now, the stick to PG-13 is, you know, it's a little wiggly on that, right? I mean, you can't really expect that people are going to be walking in there and have stuff to say about their heroin addiction or about, you know, some really severe low point in their life, and what they're going to be sharing is going to be PG-13. I think that the real PG-13 is for everybody out there who's considering coming and whether or not to bring your teenager.
Mm.
Okay? It's parental guidance. Use your parental guidance about whether you think this is something that's appropriate. And I think that that's really what it's about. Don't expect that this poetry is going to be... It's probably going to reach up into the R ratings. Okay.
So how are you going? It says there's a 3-minute limit on here. How does that, how does the timing work here?
How strict
are you, I guess, is the question.
What happens is generally we're not going to be rude enough and say, 3 minutes, and, you know, yank you with a hook or something. But you will lose points.
Ah. Okay.
There will be deductions.
So you get docked if you're
You get docked yeah. points according to going over and for how long you go over.
Is there a short limit, too, like debate?
Absolutely not. I've had people get up there with beautiful, perfect little haikus, and, you know, it's more than enough.
And they're gone, right? No, yeah. 16 syllables and it's over.
Yeah, exactly.
Good enough. Okay. This is the last of the events of Recovery Month. There were a whole bunch of different things. You said you went to the swing dance a week ago, I think.
Yeah, swing bada bing with this really awesome jazz group put together with a couple of my son's music teachers, Mike Busey out of Floyd Dryden and Rob Cohen and Clay Good, and I don't even remember who else was put in that together. They had some awesome music going, and they had a swing instructor there giving people lessons at the very beginning of the thing, and it was so fun. My 85-year-old mom got up and got a couple of dances in as well.
All right. So you folks got to realize that her mom is watching us through the studio window here. But what I wanted to say about the dance was it must have been quite an event because me came in with crutches when she...
completely unrelated variety of physical miseries in my life at the moment, but that's
sorry.
Okay.
Anyway, so there were a couple of other events. Last time when we were introducing the swing dance, we heard a little bit about the FASD Awareness Day. And I guess statewide, somebody said there were like 860 restaurants that
wonderful amount of participation.
Gave away free non-alcoholic drinks to pregnant ladies during the course of that day.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Even to ladies who might be pregnant. That was really a wonderful little piece of promotion. Table tents all over the state that basically brought people's attention to it.
I agree. Just becoming aware.
Yeah. So this whole event has been put together by a group of different organizations that have to deal with this. I think if we tried to read them all, it'd probably take us a while. But the key ones in Juneau are whom? Do you know? The Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. I don't know if they're
here.
I'm assuming they're here.
Yeah, actually.
Alaska Addiction Professionals Association, AAPA.
You know what? I'll tell you that it's Terry Tibbett
it's
over there
tiny
at,
print.
At the first
you're
one.
Doomed.
I have my glasses.
Oh, okay.
Because I have a poem I want to read you if we have
right.
time.
Oh, okay.
But
well, we better get to that real quick.
Okay. Well, let me tell you, it's the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse, really, and Terry Tibbett has just been making her just awesome amount of effort there, and also some fairly serious support from Gatineau Human Services, let's see, JYS. As well, are the kind of main movers and shakers that have been attending the planning meetings. You know, other than funny little volunteers like me who show up and say, ha-ha, I want to do the poetry slam this year, you know.
So I hope this is PG-13. Here it is, folks. She's going to slam us now.
This is an introduction and an invitation to all of you out there. What are you recovering from? Are you even aware? Share your disease. ID your diagnosis. What brings you to your knees? Injury, poverty, hunger, abuse? Get used to it. A brain-based disorder, the wrong skin color? Honor it. Own it. Broken home, bipolar, codependence, dysfunctional romance, a chance for discovery, to begin recovery. You have to know what's your addiction. Prescriptions, narcotics, psychotic drama, sex, food, mood enhancers, alcoholism, of course. What else? PTSD, ADD, ADHD, PDD, NOS. Do I have to spell it out for you? Are you schizophrenic, subject to panic, depression, anxiety? There's quite a variety of crosses to bear. Where are you coming from?
Give us the time and the days. It's the Poetry Slam, the last event in Recovery Month.
It is tonight at 6:30 at Rockwell. Doors open at 6 o'clock.
Thank you.
Everything's free.
Okay.
Pickles, pickles, I like pickles. I like them better than an old fudgesicle. Pickles, pickles, I like pickles. Won't you give me a pickle? Pickles, pickles, I like pickles. Don't you know they make my tummy tickle? Pickles, pickles, I like pickles. Won't you give me a pickle? Sliced ones, kosher ones, let's have a garlic one. I'll eat pickles however they come. Sweet ones, dill ones, chopped up and relished ones. I like pickles, oh yes I do. Oh, pickles, pickles, I like pickles. You got no pickles, I'll take a nickel. Pickles, pickles, now I might sound fickle, but I prefer a pickle. Met a young man up in old Wisconsin, and he likes pickles. He asked me to write him a song about pickles, so here's your pickle. Sliced ones, kosher ones, let's have a garlic one. I'll eat pickles however they come. Sweet ones, dill ones, chopped up and relished ones. I like pickles, oh yes I do.
By Jim Cosgrove. He's doing a show Sunday at, it's Sunday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon at the JDHS at the auditorium, right? Am I getting that all? Hang on, I haven't got you mic'd. Speak to us.
You got that right. 2 o'clock, JDHS.
Is a Montessori benefit. So
yes, it is.
Yep.
And it's good for people with stinky feet. So,
all that sort of stuff. So here she is, lady who keeps track of all of those things that are going on around here. Nancy,
it's getting harder and harder, Pat. There's no school tomorrow, and there was no school today either, I gather. I think from 10 until 7, Friday and Saturday both. It's the final Sean McColl trio at the Alaskan Bar and Hotel. And it's the usual Kimball organ thing. You can do that at noon. That's always fun. 5 o'clock this afternoon, the second annual Great Alaska Pumpkin Festival begins. This will run tonight until 9, and then it's again tomorrow from 10 until 5. They're getting all sorts of funny things set up there. Apparently was a catapult, a pumpkin catapult, yesterday, 40 feet. Well, I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, they did that down at the beach, I think.
Sandy Beach, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's better than catapulting from the lawn over to this direction. We could have a catapult party. I can see it happening now. 6:30, there is a recovery poetry slam at the Rockwell Ballroom.
Just got done talking about it. It looks like it's going to be quite an event.
Yeah. And then at 7 o'clock, the Downtown Public Library, Pete Griffin is talking, the voice of the Tongass. That's a free thing. He's an excellent story raconteur, I guess would be the right word for him. Evening at Egan, Israel, the Occupied Territories and Nonviolent Resistance. This is a photographer. This is at the Egan Lecture Hall at 7
Skip
p.m.
Skip Scheel. He was on the show this afternoon.
See, you don't need
first
me.
First guest today.
Yeah, what the heck. Anyway, that's free. And there's also a Swing Into Recovery swing dance at the Rockwell Ball.
That was last week.
Well, then why did they put it on this
I don't
week?
Know, but it's dead over, I can tell you right now.
All right, we'll take
it was
that.
A pretty good event. Swing by
did
the Ding
swing?
Was the band.
Mm-hmm.
I did not go, but me said she was there, and she was on crutches, so it must have been a heck of a night.
I saw somebody at the emergency room. Well, that explains why they were going to go quickly from 6:30 to 7 p.m. I was curious about
there
that. Mice and Men.
Yes. Now, that's happening.
Have
that's
you seen
two,
it?
2 weeks. No, I'm going next Saturday.
I will
next
say,
Saturday.
When I checked the status for tickets for Saturday night this weekend, there were only 7, and that was at noon.
Mm-hmm.
If you read the review in the newspaper, which was fabulous, and I love the name of the column, Q to Q, but it is amazing. It is an amazing performance. Wonderful. I do not miss this thing. So, and make sure you get tickets, because with, like I said, you're going to just not get tickets. It's if you just slow, don't get them right away. Okay, so the Alaska State Museum is having a youth workshop series. They're redrawing history. And Saturday morning from 9:30 to 11:30, it's M.K. McNaughton, and that one is unfortunately, the registration is sold out, but you can put yourself on a wait list by calling 465-2901. And then also over at the museum from 1 until 3, Redrawing History with Dan Daru, and there were only a couple of slots left in that one. So if you're interested in having your child do these cool things over at the museum, 465-2901.
Dan Daru probably has the most original graphic sense of humor I have ever experienced.
Yes,
he's amazing. He really
a very funny and very talented guy. At 9:30 in the morning, the Juneau Economic Development Council has their That Saturday thing, where I think they just roll out a whole bunch of stuff and let you put it, tinker around with it. It's great for kids. 523-2342 to register for that one. Latitude 58 at Latitude at Theater at Latitude 58 will be presenting the best Christmas pageant ever, and auditions for children ages 7 to 11 are happening from 10 until noon at the Nugget Mall. It's a great little story if you never read it.
Okay, so let's do that one slow again so people get it. So the auditions are when?
The auditions are from 10 until noon at the Nugget Mall,
and
it is the theater at Latitude 58 that is doing this.
Right, and it's the best Christmas story ever. And
when
do you have any idea when it's going to
pageant ever? Sometime around Christmas.
Yeah, soon.
Yes, absolutely. Sooner than you think. I mean, it's what? It's the end of September.
Wait a minute.
And as I mentioned earlier, the Great Pumpkin Festival, 10 to 5. 10 to 6, there's the Alaskan Bar's Got Music. 10:30 in the morning, Story Yoga for Kids at the Rainforest Yoga. 11:45, Learn to Skate for Tots and Youth over at the Treadwell Arena. There is a dance workshop finger symbols, that sort of stuff.
And she was just Egyptian with us cane. Just a moment or so ago. You're talking about Morocco's dance workshops, yeah.
Yeah, 12:30 to 5 mm-hmm. at the Racquetball Club. 1 to 4, KXLL and Zach Gordon are doing a dropped-out drop-in day. You want to talk about that at all?
Well, yesterday, you know, we had a kind of a precursor of that where we had a whole bunch of people on this show and talked about various aspects of bringing students back into the schools. So this is really a drive that the schools have put together to try to reach out to students that mm-hmm. That have gone away and need to come back and finish this up.
Yeah, you know, we can just say it's a good idea, kids.
The best thing I heard on the show yesterday was that I can't remember who it is, but one of the pitches that one of the school people use is she says, "Is it worth a quarter? If somebody paid you $250,000, would you go back to get your degree, your high school diploma?" And then she points out that that is a number from national studies that indicates that if you have a high school diploma, you're going to probably in your lifetime make between $250,000 and $600,000 more than someone who doesn't.
So there you have it. And they are going to have prizes and get all sorts of stuff. So that's from 1 to 4 over at Zach Gordon. Good thing to be doing. 6:15, Juno Roller Girls versus the North Pole Babes in Toyland. It's about... Over at the Centennial Hall, the doors open at 6:15, and at noon there were still tickets. The bout begins at 7. These are just rip-roaring fun. You must be 21 or with a parent to come, but don't miss it. It's a lot of fun. Support the Juno Roller Girls over there. We got Dan up at the Gold Room at the Baranoff playing guitar, of course, and Mice and Men again. And at 9 p.m., our favorite, Kari and the Wrist Rockers, is at PP's Douglas Inn, which is also known as Louie's in Douglas. So that's a great evening. And then, as you mentioned earlier, 2 p.m., Mr. Stinky Feet.
Mm-hmm.
Benefit for Juno Montessori at the JDHS High School Auditorium. Get your tickets before you get there. 5:30 p.m., Juno Jazz and Classics, Swingin' in the Rain Cabaret Workshops begin. And you can call over to Jazz and Classics and get the details. They rehearse sometimes at Big Blue and sometimes at the Jack, and then the performance will be next week. 7 p.m., Tracing the Jordan River through Israel and Palestine, again with your photographer, Skip Scheel. Mm-hmm. This will be at Northern Light United Church, and it's offered by the Juno People for Peace and Justice. It's free. You can still see Mice and Men on Sunday, beginning on Monday. If you've never seen the NOAA Ted Stevens Marine Research thing, you can begin to, with 48 hours notice, you can arrange a tour. So if you got friends from out of town or you just feel like taking the kids to see something interesting, give Ralph Steves a call at 789-6050 and set that up sometime during the wintertime. Tuesday, Pathways, a free tobacco session class at the Bob Valiant Administrative Building Classroom at Bartlett Hospital. That's at 5:30. Wednesday, we have the start of a Hatha yoga class at Rain Forest Yoga. Thursday is Manufactured Landscapes, a UAS environmental film series film at the UAS Egan 112. It's free. And the Pavitt folks are talking about effective exercise for weight loss. And you can see the Mice and Men. We have kind of a busy week.
We do.
As
Nancy,
always.
Here's one more, and this is the music in the background is the New York Polyphony. Polyphony, yes, and they will be coming to Juno on Tuesday, October 9th, 7 p.m. in the TMH Auditorium, and you probably ought to be getting tickets to it.
You should be getting tickets, and one of the things we decided to do today, because we don't think we're going to be able to do a student show, is if you are a high school choir member, give us a call and we'll give you a $5 ticket to go see these.
Outstanding.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
Thank you, Nancy.
Sure, thank you.
Wonderful. See you later. On Monday, Katie Bowsler's hosting the show, Disability Awareness Month. Our guests will talk about the various aspects of that month coming up. Chris Taylor and Amy Hoke O'Neill will be here. They'll be highlighting happenings at the Canvas. Khaki Shields will be here with the First Friday exhibit at the Jack. This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas, and we also broadcast on a set of translators. in the valley in Auk Bay. We're on K276AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, we're on K269AO at 101.7. Gustavus hears us on K201AM at 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, we're on K210AS at 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. And we also stream continuously at www.ktoo.org.
Support for programming on this station is provided by Lauren Jones, candidate for the City and Borough Assembly. Paid for by Jones for Assembly, Box 240703, Douglas.
Sweet.